Having any one of the Academy Award-winning actors, Al Pacino, Christopher Walken, or Alan Arkin in a film is enough to make it worth seeing, but to have all three, well, that sounds like a dream come true. Then again, you need to have the right plot and the right director to pull it off, and Fisher Stevens certainly has in his latest, Stand Up Guys, which opens today in theaters around town. Pacino, Walken, and Arkin play retired gangsters who get together one more time in a movie that winds up being both very funny and bittersweet. Fisher Stevens was here the last time to talk about producing The Cove, a documentary that won him an Academy Award. It's great to have you back.
Great. Thank you. Great,
and this is quite a stretch from The Cove, which dealt with the killing of dolphins in Japan, and from your follow-up documentary about Woody Allen for PBS. Had you dropped out of directing features for a while?
I didn't drop out. I just – nothing came my way that looked that interesting until Stand Up Guys. So that kind of pushed me back into this, which I really enjoyed and had the time of my life making with these crazy guys.
Well, what about acting, which you began as an actor?
Yeah, right? I acted for since I started professionally when I was 16 in a horror film that was produced by these two guys at the time that were unknown, named the Weinstein Brothers. And at 18, I was my friend Matthew Broderick was doing this play off Broadway called Torch Song Trilogy, and got me an audition to replace him because he was going to go on to do Brighton Beach Memoirs, and I ended up replacing him in both of those plays.
So how did you get involved in making documentaries?
About 10 years ago, I was a part of a company called Green Street Films, and somebody came in named John Batsek, who had won an Academy Award for 7 Days in September, the movie that Munich was loosely based on. And he pitched me a film about Pele coming to play soccer in New York in the 70s for the New York Cosmos, and a guy named Steve Ross who wanted to turn soccer into the new National Football League. I thought it was a great idea. I moved to New York in 76, so I thought this is a perfect movie to kind of showcase New York then. And we took it on, and unfortunately, he delivered a unwatchable film, and my partner said, "You better fix it." So I took it on myself to fix it and learned how to make documentaries.
So here you are. You have acted, you've produced, you've directed. The only thing you haven't done is written a film?
I have not written a film yet. That's next. It's in the works of my traumatic childhood, which is the reason I'm so scattered in real life. I'm make a film about that next.
They say that the most important part of a successful play or film is casting. You have three incredible actors here. Were any of them on board when you got onto this project?
Not officially. Christopher Walken, I was told, was interested in playing Val, which is actually the part that Al Pacino ended up playing. And when I got the job to direct, the studio said, "You have to cast the movie before we're going to actually make the movie, but Chris is interested." And I called Chris, who I knew socially, never worked with, and said, "Hey, Chris, it's Fisher. I'm going to be directing the film." He's like, "Oh, hi, Fisher. Hi." And I said, "We're going to make this movie, and you're going to play Val." He goes, "Yeah, but I like Doc, too. You know, I like playing a grandfather because I'm that age now." So I said, "Okay."
And he's perfect for Doc.
He's perfect for Doc. And they had told me that Al Pacino was not available. And I'd known Al and lost touch with him because he moved to California. And time went by. And after trying to chase actors for a long time, my phone rang months later. And it was Al, who had seen the Woody Allen documentary and wanted to talk about doing a documentary with me. And I said, "Can you read the script?" And he said, "Sure." And that's how it came about.
Well, Pacino seems perfect to play the wired character Val, who just got out of prison after 28 years for not giving up his associates for a job. And Chris Walken is just right for Doc,
yeah.
Val's best friend, who's tormented by a secret that's come to haunt him. Had they ever worked together?
Never. First time in 40 years of knowing each other that they'd worked together, except there was a near miss that at the Public Theater, they were going to do Hamlet together. Al is Hamlet, Chris is Laertes, Meryl Streep is Ophelia, Joseph Papp directing.
Wow.
And I didn't get the exact details, but the entire thing fell apart after 2 weeks of rehearsal for whatever reason.
Then, are you the one who picked Alan Arkin to play Hirsch?
Yes.
Hooked up to an oxygen tank in a nursing home?
There was nobody else in my mind for that role than Alan. I worked with him as an actor in a movie in Brazil, of all things, like 20 years earlier in this, both of us like the only Americans in a movie in mostly Portuguese, so we bonded. And Rio 20 years ago was not Rio today. It was even more of the Wild West. So we got to be friends, and I called him up, and fortunately, I had Alan Chris already committed, so that made it easier to get Alan.
And then you got Julianne Margulies for a small role here.
Yes.
I mean, she's a star now. Is it ironic that before she was in The Good Wife, she was on ER and she was playing a nurse, and here she's playing a nurse again?
Yeah, I wanted to get her back in the scrubs. Yeah, she's playing. You know, she's a dear friend of mine. We've worked together in Naked Angels Theater Company and on stage, and she wanted to have a moment with these three guys, and it took her away from The Good Wife a little bit, play a different type of role, and she said it was like a master class of acting working with those guys.
In what way? Their styles are a little different, aren't they?
They're all different, but watching them and their commitment at this time in their career, they work nonstop on the role. I mean, going over every line over and over again. We would rehearse every Saturday, going over the next week's work. We didn't have a lot of time to make the film. I don't think Al has ever shot a film this quickly where he was the lead in every scene, so we had to have it together.
Well, I can't imagine you'd have the chutzpah to give them suggested line reads.
I didn't give line readings because I hate getting line readings as an actor, but I would give them suggestions, and sometimes they agreed and sometimes they didn't. But yeah, I definitely tried to direct them as much as possible.
And then you just point the camera and assume that these three great actors are going to do a good job for you. Juliana mentioned that you kept saying you wanted this movie to have a 70s feel. What did you mean by that? This takes place in the present.
Yeah. It takes place in the present, but I felt like it was the prime of these guys' life, of their lives, was the 70s. And it's like time has passed them by. And even Al actually went to jail. Chris went to his own jail. Alan Arkin is in a nursing home. So it was kind of the flavor of the 70s that we were looking for. The music is mostly from the 70s, except for Bon Jovi. And I'm obsessed with 70s movies. I feel that was a great time for cinema and went for that kind of feeling.
In fact, that was many people consider a golden age of American movie making, both the independents and the Hollywood films. And then suddenly it was all explosions.
Yeah. Well, some credit Jaws with the beginning of the end and some credit Star Wars with the beginning of the end. I don't know, but there's been great movies obviously made every year and they continue to be made, but it changed the whole tenor of filmmaking for sure.
My guest is Fisher Stevens, who is wearing the director's hat in his latest project called Stand Up Guys, which opens in theaters around town. Since you are an actor, do you have an approach to directing other actors? Do you direct them the way you would want to be directed?
Yeah, partially. I try not to talk to any I try to talk to every actor differently because I feel like we're all individuals, as opposed to a general kind of tone. That really informed me. I write little bios for each character, so that I kind of have my own questions answered about each character and what the role is, and then I discuss it with them. So I kind of try to get as in-depth, even with tiny roles, with each actor as I can.
Do you feel that some directors who haven't been actors can miss the mark?
Yeah. I mean,
there are the other sides of making sure that the scene is well lit, that the camera moves well, that all sorts of other things happen. But sometimes the actors just look like they're left to take care of it on their own.
Which is why it was interesting because these guys, Pacino and Walken and Arkin, actually like direction because I think often they work with writers and sometimes they don't. I mean, Al is obviously, they've all worked with brilliant directors, but I know sometimes I'd do a scene and I'd get nothing from a director at times because he'd just be worried about how the camera moved or what was I saying the right lines. So I think actor-directors have that advantage, but we have other disadvantages maybe that a writer may have or someone who comes from another part of the industry. But
so what did they want from you? Did each one want something different?
Yeah. I feel like all three of them wanted feedback. It wasn't just you were good or you were bad. It was what was good, what was bad, and specific. So they did. They were curious.
And Pacino actually has a different accent here. he walks differently than I expected. But one thing that he does that I've seen him do before brilliantly is he has this amazing dance scene in a bar. How long did that take to choreograph?
We didn't fully choreograph every step, but he worked with someone for a couple of weeks, and Al was hilarious. He exercises often by putting music on and dancing, so he's a really terrific dancer. And I think the producers thought only Chris Walken could dance because we've all seen Chris dance. He was a chorus boy, you know, "Pennies from Heaven" and "Fat Boy Slim" video.
And he can sing too.
And he can sing as well. Al shocked me. I mean, "Scent of a Woman," he danced beautifully, but it was a tango. Here, he kind of moves gracefully and elegantly with this young woman. And there's another dance that we cut out that's going to be on the DVD where he really let it out, let it loose, went wild with this girl.
What dancing. About you filming it? There have to be an awful lot of setups.
Yeah. I mean, I had to be careful. At one point, I let it go a little too long, and I was like, okay, cut. God, that's enough fish. Jesus, I'm 70 years old, you know. But I did get carried away once or twice, letting him go a little too much, maybe.
Now, one of the areas of filmmaking that a lot of directors who aren't action directors get have problems with is car chases. Mm-hmm. But you have a great car chase scene here.
Oh, thanks.
How did you go about approaching material that everybody has seen so often or think they have and make it fresh?
Well, yeah, I was worried about that. I had a second unit stunt guys doing all the stunts, which was fantastic. B, I tried to let my actors tell the story. I had these three great actors who've never worked together who are in one confined space. So we let them go a little bit. And I tried to cover it in many, many different ways with many different camera angles, and actually even used a thing called the biscuit, which is where you put the car on a little, almost like a little go-kart. And there's a guy in a helmet who's driving it. And when you see the guys scared, they're really scared because that thing is flying. So there's some great moments of Chris and Al and Alan, and I tried to get him to go. I just told Alan to look like relaxed, like you're the only one not. And Alan was very cool, but Chris and Al did get a little scared, and I think that helped the scene.
It's been my experience when three people who've been in the business for so long get together, they tell great stories.
Great.
And here they are jammed in that little car.
Yeah, there was a lot of storytelling. I asked them if I could kind of constantly roll B-roll on them for doc footage, and they wouldn't let me because I just thought, how often do you get to be with these three legends and hear stories about Brando and Jewison? And, you know, they've worked with a lot of the same directors, and they had the exact opposite reactions to them and working with them, which was really interesting.
And one would say, I thought it was great to work with. The other one said, oh, he was a disaster.
Exactly. So I'm curious what they're going to say about me. But yeah, and also actors, they would bring up a name and oh, I loved working with him. Really? I had a very difficult time with him. It was funny, Al. You know, so it was never, it was interesting to hear their perspectives, you know. And they had all kinds of stories about each other and auditioning for roles that each other had. And I mean, it was just wild.
Well, as you pointed out earlier, Chris Walken originally considered himself for the part that Pacino wound up in. Mm. That's part of the fun of acting, isn't it? That people become somebody they're not really.
That's right. That is the beauty. And these guys love acting still. I mean, Chris and Al in particular would carry Shakespeare plays in their pocket Shakespeare, and they would start reciting lines, doing scenes. They actually started doing a scene from Hamlet, and you know, Chris has done tons of Shakespeare as well. So it was quite a trip to listen to them.
I heard you recently went to see Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, the new production of Broadway, and you found some similarities between it and stand-up guys?
Very little, but the one thing I found was that, you know, Big Daddy, who's going to die, finally decides to start living again because he's you know, thinks he's going to die. And the same thing is happening with these guys who think they might die. So they're finally coming back to life. So in that sense, there was a similarity. But I think I could say that's pretty much about where the buck stopped there. But
do you miss working on the stage?
I really do. I would love to get back on stage.
Would you direct?
Yeah.
For example, Joel Grey, after all of this very long career, was asked to direct The Normal Heart, and he did an amazing job. Nobody would have expected Joel Grey to get such incredible performances out of those actors.
Yeah. Well, I did direct John Leguizamo's last Broadway show, Ghetto Clown, but it was a one-man show, which I loved working with John.
We had him
on that.
For that.
Yeah. I would like to act next, though, on stage as opposed to direct, I think, on stage, because I just need it. It fills your soul, and it's just finding time now. And, you know, you don't really make money unless you're Al Pacino on stage. It's very difficult. So you have to find that right moment. You need that big paycheck, then go work on stage.
But you wouldn't want to find yourself in a niche and just be a director from now on?
No, I don't think so. I like balancing. I'm actually going to go do a tiny role in Wes Anderson's next film just because I miss acting so much. But I am my next big project I'm going to direct is Philip Roth's American Pastoral.
Oh, wow.
Which is going to be a year at least of my life. So there won't be much acting until I get that right. And that is a big, 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 big job.
Meanwhile, you had this great experience, I'm sure, working with some incredible actors, Al Pacino, Christopher Walken, Alan Arkin, Julianna Margulies. The film Stand Up Guys opens today in theaters around New York and the metropolitan area. And my great thanks to Fisher Stevens for coming by to talk about it.
Thank you. It's great to be here. I love your show.